Tonight, I'd like to explore the subject of happiness, or deeper than that, well-being. That can come from happiness, of course, but also can come from a sense of realizing the goodness of our own hearts. It's such an important subject because a sense of happiness, a sense of well-being, or that kind of not taking ourselves so seriously, having a sense of lightheartedness, but at the same time, understanding and actually recognizing the goodness of our hearts and just the balance of how those come together in our lives. It brings us to a place of balance in the body as well as the mind. Because, of course, the mind affects the body, as Sayadaw Utejaniya was speaking about this afternoon. It's not substantially about the happiness of getting or acquiring anything. Although we can say that, for example, when we practice generosity or we practice gratitude or even we practice loving kindness, we are doing it with the inclining of the mind towards experiencing that in our own hearts. But it's not like we get an ice cream and we have that kind of temporary happiness, although it was nice to have that ice cream this afternoon. But you notice that it's gone. That happiness is gone now. But there's more enduring happinesses, more enduring happinesses lead to that deep well-being. So it's not about acquiring, it's about more about appreciating. It's more about letting go, the kind of joy that comes from not holding on, the tension of holding on, not being weighed down by seeing through the lens of ignorance. You know, sometimes ignorance is bliss. But then we come to know as we practice that there's a lot we've been ignoring, and then opening to that can bring a lot of happiness. Just opening to what we've been sweeping under the rug for a long, long time. So there are various kinds of happiness that we can give attention to. And so tonight in this exploration, it will be about gratitude, generosity, virtuous activity, or sila, which means living in harmony with ourselves and others, the understanding of how samatha practice or concentration practice gives a sense of happiness, well-being, and wisdom or panya, protecting our lives, our hearts, our minds from wrong view, from ignorance. The Buddha said that there are two kinds of remarkably rare and precious beings in this world. And he said that there are those who are generous and those who are grateful. So just wanted to start out there. It's so, sometimes it seems so ubiquitous that we ignore it, you know, the generosity that's all around, just the generosity of everyone here feeding each other. That's really a deep sense of well-being when I recognize that my fellow wayfarers are taking care that I have enough, you have enough nourishment every day to keep going. That kind of interconnectedness, that kind of sense of well-being dissolves that sense of separateness. And I realize that when I see that somebody gave for that day to eat, I realize, or that meal, I realize that I'm not separate from that being, that there is a being in the world that cares, maybe not about me in particular, but about all of us. And so, of course, when we or I have a chance to give that back, then there's a happiness there too in that generosity. But first, gratitude. Gratitude dissolves that sense of being separate from one another. When somebody says thank you to me or expresses their gratitude to me, somehow there's something about them and us, about you and me, that dissolves. It's the heart just opens, and in that moment there's that feeling of a deep kind of caring. To me, this is the best kind of holy communion of life, when there's that deep kind of caring. There's a deep realization that my existence in life depends on the kindness of others, and that the existence of other people's lives in this world depend on my kindness as well. And so we pay attention to that. It's important to pay attention to those little things of life that are not so little. We can, the wonderful understandings that come through the Dharma that can be opening, that's great, but we mustn't forget these simple things in life that just keep us going as human beings, keep our feet on the ground so our head's not so much in the clouds that we're floating away and not thinking about the basic things of life. In recent years, there have been more and more scientific studies on the calming of the mind because of His Holiness the Dalai Lama's interest in how science can prove what meditators have always known for thousands of years. So there have been these studies on calming the mind, compassion, other meditative experiences. And most recently, there's been some news releases on the effects of how the attitude of gratitude has beneficial effects on not just physical, but mental well-being. So, in preparing this talk, actually just last year for Thanksgiving, to give it at someplace else during Thanksgiving, I looked some of those researches up and tried to find out what would be applicable to our understanding that would help us to really pay attention to that, those right attitudes that we've been talking about here in retreat a lot, to incline the mind towards that right attitude. So in the moments when we're mindful of the feeling of gratitude, science has found out, and we have known, that there can be, when we pay attention, a deep sense of relaxation in the mind. They, you know, by hooking all these nodes up, hundreds of nodes, to people and testing what happens when gratitude comes in the mind, they see that there's a deep sense of relaxation in the mind, which then affects the body. And it gives rise to a quiet kind of happiness. So not just the relaxation, but the happiness factor, it shows up in the kind of the electrical impulses of the physical brain, that's heightened. So just about gratitude and noticing that in my own mind. I was putting my mother's pictures in a different order a few months ago. I think some of you know that it was last year in March that she passed away. And so a few months ago, I was taking her pictures and rearranging them. And there was one picture of her younger, and there was one picture of her just a few months before she passed away. And just in that moment, you know, I could have just been busily cleaning and dusting, and but just in that moment I said, you know, this is important, just to reflect on my mother and her life and my relationship to it. What's happening in my own mind, just noticing what's going on, looking at these pictures. So seeing my mother's picture when she was quite young, like 20, 25 years younger than the time of her latest picture, right at her, on her birthday, actually, just before she passed away. And a natural and spontaneous reflection about all she had done in her life. You know, of all the good things she had done. Of course, there were a lot of other things that I remember that weren't so pleasant, but just how generous she was, how she never let a person leave our house, even though we were poor, without giving them something to take with them, even if it was just a cup of rice in a plastic bag. And the goodness that came out of her life, and that I felt so grateful to just be a witness to, that she never said, you must be generous or do this or do that. There were some areas where she gave her advice in even a heavy-handed manner. But just watching her, and I felt so grateful to be her daughter and to be born in this life with that kind of example. It said that we could never repay our parents, the Buddha said, that if we carried them on our shoulders for all of our lives, and even if they defecated on us during that time, we'd never be able to repay them. And I believe that, even though it's sometimes have been hard. It said in the Tibetan teachings, this is where I heard it. It might be in other Buddhist teachings, but I heard it from the Tibetan teachings, that there are four most precious opportunities that we have as a human being. And the first one is simply to be born as a human being. This is one of the first of the four most precious opportunities that we have. And the second one is hearing the Dhamma, which we have. We are incredibly grateful. I'm sure I speak for all of you, to be here to listen to the Dharma when it's spoken, and to have someone from, you know, some place where the Dharma is so deep and so cellular, and it comes from just many generations. We have this incredible opportunity here. The third is finding a teacher to help awaken you. We're lucky in the West that we have many teachers. It's not just one teacher, but we can go, all we have to do is take the news of the Northwest Dharma news and look at how many opportunities there are here in Vancouver, down in the Bay Area. And it doesn't take that much for us to find a way to get there. We may whinge and whine, but as Steve says, we're at the top of the heap. We can find ways to hear the Dharma, even if it's just online. And the fourth one is becoming enlightened or becoming awakened. This is the fourth most precious opportunity that we have, being born as a human being. So those are things that we can be grateful for. All of, you know, at least three out of four we've got. Maybe we're not enlightened yet, but we're getting there. You know, our minds are becoming more and more awakened as we practice, as we hear the Dharma and we apply it to our lives. And being born as a human being. You know, it's sort of the most important thing in a way, but it's a thing that we can take for granted most. The other day when it was kind of the height of my not feeling so well, and I was laying in bed, couldn't come to the Dharma talk, and I thought about my cat. You know, my cat has been laying on one side. We have to keep putting her back and forth on different sides. Feather, for those of you who have been hearing the episodes every time you see me, she's still alive. And the cat that we thought would pass away a year and a half ago, she lays on one side. We have to change her. We have to clean her all the time. She can't, she can only move her mouth and her, and she just lays there and she's okay. And I was thinking, feeling sorry for myself laying in bed, and I thought about Feather, you know, and I thought how lucky I am that I'm going to get better pretty soon, you know. And I was telling Steve, I have to get better before tomorrow's interviews. And so just gratitude of being human, of having the ability to heal the body in a way that gets me up in the next few hours, the next day. And I'm not just laying there. It's such a precious opportunity that we take for granted, I think. It's said that on this plane of existence, there is just enough pleasure and just enough suffering or pain to keep us interested in a path of awakening. If there were too much pleasure, we might not want to do anything about it. It's said that in the realms where there's a lot of pleasure, there are these pleasure groves and people live for, beings live for, you know, world cycles. They arise. I don't know if it's true or not. Of course, I don't remember times of being there. Although Manindra used to say, you don't have to believe it. It's true, but you don't have to believe it. He would say like that. That there's so much pleasure that people, beings aren't interested in becoming awakened. Their bodies decay very quickly, only during the last moments of their decline, of their death. They know that they're dying because one of the ways is because the flowers around their neck start getting wilted or something like that. And then the, you know, body just declines just like that. So here we have this kind of slow decline, decay of the body. I laughed when Sayadaw said something about, what was it he said, that the something about the body, say it again, decomposes not so fast. Not so fast when the mind is there. But it's still, you know, the body's decomposing, the body's decaying, isn't it? If we don't face that truth, then we're living in denial. So we need, by facing that truth, it's just like you're living in alignment with how things are. There's not this kind of subversive resistance to it that's really sucking our energy in a way. So there's just enough pain to keep us interested in liberation, in knowing the path to liberation, and in finding a meaning to life that is beyond pleasure and pain. In the teachings, it is said about the chances of being born into this human realm, they're quite precious and rare. And the preciousness and rarity is like this. The odds are like this. Suppose there were a blind turtle swimming in waters as vast as the seven seas that we know of on this earth. That's pretty vast. And imagine that somewhere floating on these seven seas is a yoke or a hoop. And every 100 years, a very special kind of turtle that only needs to come up every 100 years for air would come up for that gulp of air. And when that turtle would come up, it would come up through that hoop. That's the rarity and preciousness of being born human. the chances of doing that for a turtle are like the chances we have to be born as a human being. So I am very grateful for my mother's hoop, you know, that, yeah, her womb was there for me to be born through. So there's a simple fact of being born as a human that we can have gratitude for. On the web, there was an experiment that I found that was done by the University of Miami in 2003. And it was about counting your blessings instead of your burdens. The experiment was about the effect of a grateful outlook on life that affected one's mental and physical well-being. So there were three groups that people were allotted to. One group, where a few people were allotted to, were asked to reflect on the hassles they had in their life. You know, just to, if they found themselves, if they found something that they were aversive about, to just keep reflecting on that. I mean, for a lot of us, we don't even have to try. It just is like that's what we do anyway. And another group of people were asked to reflect on and actually record the moments where they were grateful for what was going on in their lives. And then yet another group was asked to reflect on just their neutral life events. If there was, there were hassles, to turn the mind away from that. If there was gratitude, to turn the mind away from that. But to just notice and reflect and record neutral life events. They kept records of their moods, of their coping behaviors, of their health behaviors, and then of their overall life appraisals. It turns out that the gratitude group, the outlook group of gratitude, exhibited very heightened sense of well-being across the board, mentally and physically. You know, they tested their brain activity, they tested their urine, they tested, apparently in urine they can tell that there are certain hormones or chemicals happening in the body that are indicative of one's health and well-being. So it's said in the Dhamma that just as physical beauty is to the body, the beauty of gratitude in the mind shines through one's personality. So isn't it so that we could meet someone with features that are, you know, according to our standards, our world standards or our Western standards, that a person may be physically beautiful. But there can be other people that we know that their beauty physically does not really stand out. And maybe when we define them on the scale of physical beauty, they're not in line with our with what we think of as physical beauty. But the beauty of their hearts, because of their gratitude, because of their goodness of their hearts, really, really shines through. And all of us know of people like that in our lives. I mean, just going back to Feather, you know, just looking at our cat, she's withered away. The way she looks, her teeth and everything are just, you know, you can see she's hard to chew. Her hair's missing a lot of hair. And she looks like an old cat. You know, she's about 25 years old. And oh my God. She's really, really. But you know what? Every time we get near her and we just put our hand out a little bit just to do like this, she starts purring already. You know, she's already, that gratitude of just being nearby is there. Or just, she doesn't even talk or squeak. When she wants something, she does like this with her hand, with her arm. She goes like that. And then when we give her water or something, she looks at us and she blinks long, you know. And her heart's beauty just shines through that, whatever her physicality is. So the results of this experiment on gratitude is that a conscious focus on our blessings instead of our burdens may have an emotional and interpersonal benefits. It uplifts the mind. So Steve the other evening spoke about the four great efforts, and this is what we're working on here. When we practice equanimity, we're inclining the mind towards that beauty of the mind and heart that's able to stay open and spacious, yet caring. When we, every day, as we go through our day here, when we put our hands together at the end of a Dhamma talk, and I thought we should be doing that for Sayadaw, when he, after the end of his question-answer period, we should definitely be saying sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. He isn't requiring anything, but for our own good. You know, Manindra, after he would give me a Dhamma talk, he would tell me to say sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And I said, why? And he said, for your own good, for your own heart, you should say, well done, well spoken. Not for my sake, but for your sake. So I'm happy when you do that, you know, not for me or Steve or Seda, but for your own karmic stream, that you are developing that sense of connection and gratitude. So one of the four great efforts is to develop what has not yet arisen. And so when we can consciously stop and give thanks or know what we're grateful for, when we can consciously over and over again, even though, you know, we think it's boring or stupid or dull, when we can consciously incline the mind towards, I open my heart to this experience, whatever it is, in the equanimity practice. That inclination of the mind and heart is developing what has not yet arisen. So every afternoon when we do equanimity practice, it's no small thing that you're doing that. It's actually dropping that inclination of the mind into your karmic habitual stream pattern. And when it really takes root, it will find a way to blossom and bear fruit at the right time and over again as a pattern. And then to nourish what has already arisen. So if you find that equanimity is there already, I'm just taking these two things that we can do here. When we find that equanimity is already there, we notice it, as Seda Uteshaniya says, to notice or to recognize actually gives strength to it. To notice that when gratitude is there, to take time, just that momentary noticing of it is powerful beyond what we think it might be. Sometimes I go listen to a Dharma talk, even if I've heard it over and over again. There's some, of course, there are new things to be heard, but just because I know that in my own heart, I feel grateful for hearing the Dhamma. Any time I was looking at Steve's Four Noble Truths talk the other day, he has a listing on the front of how many times he's given that talk. You know, he's not going to give it this time at this retreat. I said, oh, why don't you give another talk, you know, this time so that yogis can listen to new things. But then I realized, you know, every time I listen to that talk, I feel so grateful that I can hear the Four Noble Truths again. I could listen to it over and over again. So gratitude has been called the forgotten factor in happiness, the forgotten factor in happiness. So just to recap and to read from this research, they have found that when we think about someone or something, we really appreciate. Now, this is metta practice, too. At the beginning of metta, we reflect on a person and the appreciation we have for that person. And then we experience a feeling that goes with that thought. The parasympathetic calming branch of the autonomic nervous system is triggered. This pattern, when repeated, bestows a protective effect on the heart. The electromagnetic heart patterns of volunteers tested become more coherent and ordered when they activate feelings of appreciation. There is evidence that when we practice bringing attention to what we appreciate in our lives, more positive emotions emerge, leading to beneficial alterations in heart rate variability. So I wanted to give more attention to gratitude during this talk, because it is a spiritual quality that it's so simple, but we can often overlook it. Sometimes the poets point the way to gratitude more than the scientists, though. Jane Kenyon was a great poet, and she really understood appreciation. She lived her life writing a lot of poems about appreciation until she died of leukemia in 1998. And she suffered from bipolar disease before that time that she died, and severe depression. And she found turning her mind over and over again to appreciation was such a great help. So this is her poem called Otherwise. And it reflects her wisdom in appreciating and giving thanks for the simple things, the ordinariness of life. I got out of bed on two strong legs. It might have been otherwise. I ate cereal, sweet milk, ripe, flawless peach. It might have been otherwise. I took the dog uphill to the birch wood. All morning, I did the work I love. At noon, I lay down with my mate. It might have been otherwise. We ate dinner together at a table with silver candlesticks. It might have been otherwise. I slept in a bed in a room with paintings on the walls and planned another day just like this. But one day, I know, it will be otherwise. So that's about gratitude. And now generosity. With regard to happiness, generosity, they say, is an act that can be completely surrounded by happiness. When we pay attention, we find this out. Because before we do make an act of generosity, actually, during the moment that the intention springs up to give something, offer our time, our energy, our material resources, in that moment of intention, when we really look at our minds, there's some lightness of mind. There's some happiness there. There's some sense of well-being there, you know, in that intention to connect with others. And then during the time of giving, when we really turn the attention to our minds and what's happening here in our hearts, we see that there's happiness there. There's a sense of deep contentment, connection that's there. And even afterwards, when we reflect on it, we see that there is happiness there. We know that it's not a happiness that is permanently there, but it's an abiding kind of happiness. It may come and go in intensity and degree and the length of time. But even when we reflect on something, some good that we've done, some generous act, and it could be just listening to a friend, taking some time to be with someone or hold someone's hand during a hard time. There's happiness there. I was trying to just take something recent, remembering something recent. And this didn't happen so recently, but it's a new intention that's come up of something that Steve and I have done in the past. And when I remembered it this afternoon, it brought a lot of happiness to me. And we're intending to do more of it. And that is when we thought of planting trees on our property, on the sanctuary that we are developing. And so what happened was that I was at this sort of gardening garden tour of these rare Hawaiian plants, and it was on Maui. And I met someone there who said that he had taken some seedlings from what is called the mother koa tree of koas are indigenous trees of Hawaii that have strong, strong wood and beautiful, beautiful wood. And there's this tree in the Haleakala crater that is called the Big Mama of them all. And a lot of trees on Maui and all over Hawaii have come from those seedlings. And this man had gathered so many of these seedlings. And he told me at this tour that he was selling them. And I was so excited to think about that we could plant them. So I went home and I immediately told Steve about it. And he got so happy about the fact that we could. It was about giving to the earth. And it wasn't just about giving to the earth, you know. It was about giving shade to beings. And the fact that the Buddha always said, go sit at the roots of trees. And that we were making a sanctuary where people could go do that. And so it didn't take but maybe a few days for us to contact the man and get one tree for every day of the year. We got about 364 trees. And so the thought of planting them brought so much happiness. And in the planting of them, we gathered the community together, and whoever wanted to come on that day could take one of those seedlings and put it in the ground. And there was so much happiness in doing that. And people would learn about it from different parts of the island and even from different parts of our bigger community. And when they'd come on island, they'd say, I heard that I could plant a tree. Can I bring this tree to plant or get a koa tree and plant it? And, you know, we'd say, yes, yes, let's do that. Come and do that. And so now, from little seedlings, those trees are 25 feet tall in after how many years now? 6 years. Things grow fast on Maui. And the trunks of the trees are huge, you know, huge for that kind of term of growth. And we've had to cull some of them so that, you know, the branches of the trees, the healthy trees that are remaining could grow and the tree could grow bigger. But now people come back who have planted those trees, and they are so happy that they planted those trees. And people who aren't even there who planted the trees ask about, how's my tree? You know? And just thinking about that was such an act of generosity for them to come there, to take their energy and put that in the ground. And especially learning about the carbon footprint that each of us put on this earth. You know, if we each planted a tree, that would be the counteraction to the carbon dioxide that our lives put in this world and on this earth. So there's a lot of happiness that just comes from simple moments like that. Moment moments of generosity that can be completely surrounded by happiness. I mentioned, maybe not in this talk, but psychologists say that they found that usually feeling good only produces more hunger for pleasure, for another moment of pleasure. Because as we know in our Buddhist understanding psychology, that if a pleasant feeling arises and it's not known with mindfulness and wisdom, then immediately on the heels of that can come attachment to that pleasant feeling. So this is true, that feeling good usually only produces more hunger for pleasure. And this is what the psychologists call the hedonic treadmill, right? It's just this over and over and over again. But the finding is that doing good produces happiness, a very kind of enduring happiness. Maybe it, of course, it isn't permanent in the sense of the word, that it's solid, but it's a deep abiding happiness that serves us in our lives. So feeling good produces only more hunger for pleasure, but doing good produces a kind of well-being. There's a friend of ours. He doesn't have very much in his life. But he's very happy. And what he did was he would pick up yogis from airport and bring them to a retreat center where we've taught. And he's so generous that he just keeps thinking of more and more things to give. Well, he gives his body parts to people that are in need of them. So he gave his bone marrow, you know, a couple of times, and the last time he gave a kidney. And so the first time he gave his bone marrow, he was in a lot of pain. And we were there around with him when he gave his bone marrow, and we saw him go through the fever and pain that he went through. So the second time that he gave his bone marrow, we happened to be there again, and he was recuperating from that. And he was, you know, it was a warm day, and he was outside, chilly, with his blankets over him. And I said, why do you keep doing this? You know, I was curious, like, what is it in your mind that makes you do this? And he said, the happiness, I wrote it down because I wanted to be careful to say exactly what he said. He said, the happiness is greater than the pain. The happiness of giving is greater than the pain. That's been an inspiration to me, although I still don't think I'd give my bone marrow. So there's a kind of well-being and happiness from giving, from generosity. I was touched when I read from Utejaniya about generosity is giving away your greed. No, it's not about the material thing. It's about that propensity of the mind to let go. To just let go. It's what we need in our practice, the ability to let go. So that's the happiness that comes from gratitude, from generosity. And then there's a well-being that comes from living in harmony, from sila, or what we call morality. Living in harmony with each other, living in harmony with our own hearts. When we take the trainings, the precepts to refrain from killing, stealing, lying, from sexual misconduct, from refraining from taking intoxicants that cloud the mind, These are trainings that help us to live in harmony with each other, with one another. When we can offer people around us a great gift, we offer them the great gift of fearlessness. So people will not fear us. When people can really rely on that we're not going to lash out with some kind of dig or some kind of acerbic remark, or that we're not, or that we're going to tell the truth. There are people I know in the Dharma that I so respect how they're careful about their speech. And those are the people, when giving the Dharma, that people really, really listen to, because there's such a safety in that connection. It's said in the Buddhist teachings that there are two qualities within each one of us that are actually the guardians of the world. First, I heard this Dharma talk about the two guardians of the world. And then I realized that the two guardians of the world are within each one of us. And that was really powerful. It empowered my own heart to understand that and to nourish that, to build that up. And those two guardians are called Hiri and Otapa. Respect for others and respect for oneself. That's what it comes down to. It doesn't matter what the Pali word is. The meaning of respecting others, respecting ourselves. These are the two guardians of the world. When we respect others, we're careful about our speech. We're careful about our actions. We're careful about anything that we take that might make that speech or action be careless. And so it gives the gift of safety not only to others, that gift of fearlessness not only to others, but a deep sense of safety within ourselves, a safety to know that if I really pay attention to my intention and to my motivation, and I know that it's as clean and pure as I can make it, I can go around and feel blameless. And that feeling of blamelessness is a powerful feeling when I feel that in myself. When I feel that I've not done anything wrong to harm another, as far as I know from my intentions. And so these two guardians of the world give not only others a gift, but give our own karmic streams a gift. Because that the beauty of respecting ourselves, respecting others, the beauty of that purity can be born and reborn over and over again in our lives as good conditions, good inner and outer conditions. And this is from... it doesn't say who wrote this, but from the Dzogchen teachings, the heart essence of the great perfection. Now in our day-to-day lives, we know that the more stable, calm, and contented our mind is, the more feelings and experiences of happiness we will derive from it. The more undisciplined, untrained, and negative our mind is, the more we suffer mentally and physically as well. So we can see only too well that a disciplined and contented mind is the source of our happiness. And indeed, the trainings that we take in Sila are disciplines. When we say, I undertake the training to refrain from harming any living being, it's not a commandment. It's a training. It's a commitment that we make to ourselves. To cultivate that, those two guardians of the world in our own hearts. So that is about virtuous activity or training the mind.